Hello and welcome to the A-League's official podcast, final series up and running. Robbie Cornthwaite is with me. No Amy Chapman this week, unfortunately, but Robbie will have enough positivity to cover two people, considering his Reds are through to the semi-finals after knocking off Central Coast Mariners yesterday in an eventful game for a variety of reasons, which we will get into. Plenty of other big things to talk about, along with Western United knocking off Wellington to make the semi-finals. Dwight York, set to come down under to coach in the A-League. The CEO of the Macarthur Bulls, Sam Krizlovich, will join us to not only discuss that appointment, but a number of other matters in the A-Leagues in Australian football, which I think people will be very interested in. So a bumper show, Robbie Cornthwaite, as always. Hello, my friend.
Hello, mate. Yeah, as you say, only two games over the weekend in the A-League finals, but still plenty to digest. And yeah, great chat with Sam about the appointment of Dwight York and a couple of really entertaining games as well on Saturday in Amy Park and Sunday at Hindmarsh. So, yeah, lots to discuss, including where we'll start, I suppose, the overseas Aussies getting it done yet again in Europe. And, I mean, we speak about Sam Kerr every week on this show because she just continues to go from strength to strength, and Chelsea have won the FA Cup in the women's competition over there, beating Manchester City. Fantastic game. I saw most of the first half. Sam got the opener, took one off her teammate on the line. And then Hayley Razzo came on and equalised for Manchester City before Sam Kerr got the winner in extra time. So another trophy for her, completes the double. Golden boot season as well. And as we know, the Writers' Award as well over there. And then obviously the scenes up in Scotland. Again, we've spoken about Ange Postecoglou at length, but the moment that really got to me was the Tommy Rogic moment when he came off to that standing ovation. And I honestly, I had a few tears because it was just, you know, I thought about my own career and when I retired, and I know he's not retiring, but just to see him come off, how emotional he was, you just don't realize what kind of impact some of these moments are going to have on you as a player. And I suppose now at 29, he's a free agent. Where do you reckon he's going, Daniel?
Well, to answer that question, firstly, I would say most likely the Middle East or Asia. It seems like it's that sort of situation because he had another year in his contract. So it feels like this was a deal that was in the works for a little while, and he's decided that he wants to go down a certain path. And it seems like that one, you know, the big payday at this stage of his career. Hopefully he gets a move somewhere else to Europe. I think we'd all love to see that. And we would have loved to have seen that for Tom Rogic at some stage in his career, because we all know he's got the capabilities to succeed. And I think we all would have wanted to see him test himself in another league at some stage, one of the big four leagues, if you like. But it does seem like it's going to be a move to that part of the world. I don't know, but that is the speculation. And I can understand why people are leaning towards that outcome for Tommy. And then maybe the A-League down the line. But it was great to see him tear up like that, because we've watched Tommy Rogic very closely for the last decade, and he's never showed emotion like that. Never. And I think that was the part of it that took people back, watching that vision. You know, Tommy, in the last, for whatever reason, the last 7 or 8 years, has become standoffish with the media. Not that he's rude to us, not at all. You see, Tommy always says hello, always polite, but doesn't want to do much media. So we haven't got to see a lot of Tommy in a personal sense. And we're talking about potentially a top five, top six Australian footballer of the last decade. No, he's right up there. 16 trophies he's won in Scotland. I know it's easy to win trophies when you're at Celtic, but you know, he's had a great contribution to the big club. And we haven't seen that side of his personality much. So to see it on the weekend, I think was great for people. And I remember going to cover the day that he signed at the club, and then a year later after he had a big first season. I remember Celtic fans saying that they think he can be in that next bracket behind, you know, a Kenny Dalglish in terms of legends of the football club. They thought he had that much talent. I think injuries stopped him getting to maybe that level and held him back a lot. But 16 trophies, as I said, he is an absolute icon of that football club now, which is great for an Australian to hold that sort of mantle. So well done to Tommy, and all the best with where you go next. But hopefully the most important thing on his mind right now is the Socceroos and trying to fire us to a World Cup. That is the next item on the agenda for him. And obviously the Ange Postecoglou speech was magnificent. We know that. Everyone's seen that, as you should, on social media. And the work he's doing for Australian football is legendary, that is for sure. So we reveled in that once more on the weekend, as we should. Let's get into the finals, though, Robbie, because the semi-final setup is complete. So Tuesday night, Western United against Melbourne Victory, Amy Park. Wednesday night, a cracker in Adelaide, Adelaide against Melbourne City. And then on the weekend, the second leg of the semi-finals, the Victory against Western United, Melbourne City hosting Adelaide United. I guess the disappointing aspect from a Western United point of view, Robbie, as we go on to that game and their win over Wellington, it was a cracking contest, by the way. They don't really get a home final, do they? I mean, they've got to play both games at Amy Park. It'll be packed with Victory fans. Understandable as to why, but a shame for John Aloisi and his team that they don't get to have a home semi-final.
Yeah, you're right. Obviously, you would think it advantage Melbourne Victory. I mean, you would say that anyway, just on the form of the two sides and the seasons that they're having. But that said, it could really galvanise this Western United team. They've got a lot of guys, particular Hayden Fox on the bench, Johnny A, Neil Kilkenny, real guys that I think would thrive in that environment where, you know what, we're the enemy, we're the bad guy, and I think they play the villain really, really well, some of those guys. So, yeah, they've got a lot of experience. I mean, when you talk experience and you mention Jamie Young, what a performance from Jamie Young in that elimination final on the weekend. I mean, 1-0, was there ever going to be any other score in that game with the season that Western United have had? But if you actually watch the game, Wellington played really, really well. It was quite an evenly balanced match. And then the saves that Jamie Young made, I think he made one from Wenzel Halls in the first half, low down to his right-hand side, and the save from the header in the second half was absolutely world class. Piscopo hit the crossbar as well. So Wellington gave it a really good shake, but I think the experience and plus the Jamie Young performance was enough for Western United to get across the line.
Yeah, he saved wasn't from Wenzel Halls. That would have been something because Wenzel Halls is his teammate. But yes, it was. That would have been a story.
Well, you never know. Wenzel Halls might have nearly scored an own goal.
But he pulled off two blinders. And I love John Aloisi saying that it reminded him of Gordon Banks' famous save from Pele in that World Cup, which is, you know, arguably the greatest save of all time. I'm not saying Jamie Young's is, but it did remind you of that a little bit. Banks is down low to his right and he tips it over the crossbar, but he just came from nowhere to get a hand to it and sort of hung in the air for a split second and then managed to palm it away and had to deal with body resistance and all that stuff to have the strength to save it. Quite magnificent. And I think the subplot of that save was, yeah, you guys have been crapping on about Mark Birigidi and Oliver Sale all season long. Hey, remember me?
Yep.
Had a pretty good campaign, 10 clean sheets. There's a reason for that. Here's a little reminder as to what I've done all season long. So, yeah, I think Jamie Young deserved to be in the conversation with a quite spectacular performance. But it wasn't a 1-0 game. I mean, Wellington had plenty of chances. So did Western United. I thought it was pretty even the entire contest. But, you know, sometimes you just need a big striker to take that opportunity. And Priebic did that, you know, big reputation in the game, obviously on a big pay packet there. That's why you bring those players in, to take a chance like that, which he did. And it fires Western United through to a semi-final.
Yeah, and he started slowly this season. I know he had the quarantining and things of that nature when he first arrived here in Australia. I think maybe he had an injury or he wasn't match fit, so they kept him out of the side. That player you mentioned, Wenzel Halls, was more leading the line early in the season. And Priebic sort of took his time to get going, but once he has, he's been a real asset. And as you say, when that ball came across to the far post, his first touch, he managed to bring it down beautifully. And as it sat up, it was pretty much the only spot he could put it. I think Ollie Sale even got a fingertip to it, but went right into that top corner, and it was a strike worthy of winning a final.
So Western United go through. Wellington, congratulations on a fantastic season. To be in the finals, great effort by Ufuk Tuli and his team. We look forward to seeing you make the most of that next season when you have home games to build on, and they can build on that story, you know, during the off-season and sell that to Wellington fans. We've been away for the best part of 2 years, yet we still made the finals last season. Get out and support this team and Ufuk Tuli and what they're doing. They should have some really strong crowds to start next season as a result. And then, of course, performances dictate how they go after that. But they deserve, yeah, a lot of credit for the way in which they perform. So Adelaide United cruised through a bit more than Western United did, most certainly. You had a tough against Wellington. Central Coast, who again have had an excellent season too, just weren't up to its quality-wise over the entirety of the 90 minutes at Coopers. And the best player in the league this season, according to us at least, Robbie, just stepped up again, as he quite often does in big games in Australia, Craig Goodwin. What an awesome finish for the first and a fantastic assist for Kasuna Yenge for the second.
Yeah, Craig Goodwin was... He had a really good battle actually down that flank against Miller, because we know Miller's a beast, and he came off injured actually right before Adelaide United scored that second. I think they were trying to make a substitution, the Mariners. Didn't quite happen for whatever reason, and they were left a little bit short at the back, and Goodwin, you give him that time and space, took full toll. Now, I reckon we need to redefine the way we talk about football a little bit, because a lot of the conversation has been around how the Mariners dominated that game. And I think, yes, they dominated the ball. They dominated possession. We should be careful when we say dominated a game because they had more of the ball. During the week, Carl Viet said, you know, we know Central Coast love to make forward runs. So what did Adelaide do? They just sat back. They were happy for the Mariners to have the ball. If we say the Mariners dominated the game because they had the ball, Adelaide let them have the ball. And on the counter-attack, they scored three goals. So, I mean, it's an interesting way we look at games. Jason Cummings, I was expecting a massive performance from him, but I don't know if it was because Maresh was out injured and he didn't have the same combination up front, but scored, it was comfortably an offside goal, so it didn't count, obviously, but he was very quiet in a big final. And I suppose the question, which is maybe a ludicrous one, is, in a big game, he didn't perform. Does that put any question marks over his Socceroos starting potential?
Oh, I wouldn't have thought so. I'm not saying he definitely starts for the Socceroos, but I'd be gobsmacked if he wasn't in the squad. I mean, he's done enough since he's arrived in Australia and in his career to show that he can contribute. I mean, if he's not in the squad, I think it's beyond ludicrous.
He'll be in the squad.
Whether he starts, no one has said he will definitely start. I think he right now is still probably our best option, but it doesn't mean he definitely will. Jamie McLaren can certainly alter that narrative over the semi-finals and the grand final potentially. But he had a quiet game, but I still think he's deserving of being in the conversation for a starting 11 spot against the UAE.
Well, another big striker at the other end of the park, Kasuna Yenge, out for 4 months. Carl Viet threw him in from the start on his first game back last week, starts him again in a big final, and he scores. A lot of faith in him, and obviously he's got his body right, done a lot of hard work, rumoured to be joining Western Sydney Wanderers. That's not complete. My understanding is that is not confirmed. It's still either in the works or is a bit more of a rumour from what I can gather. But obviously starting and scoring in a final for Adelaide United is going to do a lot of good in trying to keep him. Bernardo off the bench, and you mentioned the performance of Young. I thought Mark Birighitti was pretty poor late on to concede that third, when maybe the Mariners still had a couple of minutes to keep themselves in the game, but still he's had a tremendous season. Montgomery's had a tremendous season, and the whole side's had a really good year. But like Wellington, scraped their way into the finals, and I don't know. I don't know what it was, but the other team, four teams, just had a much better season, much more air about them, and I felt like they, you know, the top four were where the champion would come from.
Just look at some of the youngsters in the Mariners lineup: Goddard, Steele, Ballard, Windus, Kai Rolls is still young, Jacob Farrell, and then off the bench, Quoll, Nisbet, Hatch. A lot of kids have come through that team this season. So to have made the finals, I think playing so many youngsters, you know, the uncertainty over Oli Bozanic and why he hasn't played, Matt Simon hasn't been there all season long. They're two leaders. Really, they still managed to get into the finals as a result. So they still deserve a massive tick, but perhaps they'll be, even though, you know, I agree with you, controlling the ball doesn't mean much, because teams are happy to sit back and pick you off on the counter-attack. We see it all the time in football. Leicester City won the Premier League doing that. You can have the ball, we'll just hit you the other way. And it was great to watch. It's not smash and grab stuff. It's different way of attacking, and quite often exhilarating to watch. They deserve enormous credit for what they've done, but Adelaide just had that bit more class. And you look at this Adelaide back four as we move into a bit of semi-final chat, Robbie, just before we get on to one of the issues to come out of the game. You know, Lopez, Jakobsen, Kiddo, Gauchi, who we know has had a good season, Popovich back there. It's a settled group defensively. You know, they've played together for a large period of the second half of the season. Isaiah is protecting them. One day, who's experienced? We know what Adelaide can do going forward. No, they had a chance to hold Melbourne City at bay and maybe catch them the other way with Craig Goodwin delivering in big games, because that back group does seem like it's in sync at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, Lockie Barr's obviously been playing a fair bit, and Carl opted to bring in Jakobsen for this game. I think Barr maybe picked up a little knock or something along those lines. But we do talk about Adelaide a lot as if they're a young team. And in areas they are. But when you mention Jakobsen, Wande, Javi Lopez, Isaias, Craig Goodwin, Kiddo, they're all 30, 28. I mean, four of them are 35. So he's got experience in all the right areas. And you mentioned the fact that they might be able to do something against Melbourne City. Adelaide's record against Melbourne City in Adelaide is phenomenal, and particularly in finals. Last time Adelaide made the grand final and won it, they beat Melbourne City at home in the semi. They've beaten them twice, I think, in FFA Cup finals in Adelaide as well. So they're going to be really, really confident at home on Wednesday. But as we know, it's a two-legged final, and you've got to be really careful in that first leg not to play yourself out of the tie. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Adelaide play a little bit of a similar way, sit back and soak it up, maybe try to hit them on the counter. They can go to Melbourne with a one or two goal lead and do something similar again, because we know they're so good on the break, so good at scoring late, and so much energy off the bench late in games. I'm not saying they're going to win. I still think City will be the better side over the two legs, but Adelaide could cause a massive, massive upset and big problems for City.
I like that. Bit of positivity from the City of Churches. He's not praying. There's some substance to the tip. We'll get into the other semi-final in a moment. But while we're talking about Adelaide, obviously the Cassini-Yenge goal was a big moment. And unfortunately, a lot of people didn't see it because of an ad break. Didn't see it live, at least. So that's obviously caused a lot of discussion, as it normally does in Australian football over the weekend. And rightfully so. It's a big moment, a big blunder. Nobody shies away from that. But yeah, I guess it's just, I thought about this over the weekend and thought, we need to maybe look at this with a bit of perspective, because it's all as a result of a new TV deal. And there were always going to be teething problems. And obviously, no one is forgiving an issue like that. That can't happen. Goals in finals need to be seen on free-to-air. But, you know, that they're going to work through issues like this. It's still the first season of a TV deal that, let's be honest, cast your mind back a year, pretty much saved the league. Like, the Fox deal was running out. We're in COVID times. We had plenty of these discussions, didn't we, Rob? Like, are we going to have a broadcaster for the A-League? And if so, are there going to be any finances to prop up the clubs to provide salaries for players? We're very lucky that Channel 10 and Paramount came in and offered the money that they did. Now, there are obviously numerous issues at the moment that everyone's trying to work through, and the weekend highlighted one of them. And I don't know what ideas you've got for ad breaks and how we can better rectify them, so that we don't have moments like that that people don't see on free-to-air. But it's the realities of the broadcaster that the league has partnered with, and a commercial broadcaster, that you need to have them. There was obviously a mistake there. There was about to be a sub made, and so they went to an ad break, and then the decision was changed at the last minute. It wasn't communicated to the referees. A goal scored in that passage of play. So communication blunder. But unfortunately, there's no getting around ad breaks when you pony up with free-to-air. It provides a lot of money. So what other way is there to do it? For me, I'd like to see, maybe if you go to an ad break, you have a little screen in the bottom that still shows what's happening. And then if a play is unfolding, the director can quickly cut out of that ad break and you go to it straight away, or people can still see it and you capture the emotion of the ball hitting the net still, at least. But it's a tricky one. I'm not sure how you think it's best rectified.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously part of the game at the moment. We know it's not traditionally part of football, but we're going to have to try and find a way to rectify. I think there's also opportunities for in-game advertising that we haven't utilized. We know that there's a lot of computer-generated graphics that come up on screens in cricket and different sporting organizations where, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen, but in different locations around the world, there's different adverts being shown on the advertising boards. You don't even realize, because it's all computer generated. It's not always at the ground. So, you know, maybe there's an opportunity to have some in-game adverts on the pitch or around the pitch, on the sidelines, all these kinds of things. A super or a graphic coming up across the bottom, like a a scrolling thing. I'm not sure. Obviously, we want to be able to incorporate both, but I think cutting away from the game and maybe missing a moment like that is the big problem. As you say, a split screen or a pick within a pick. There's different options, I think, that can be explored without cutting away from the game completely. Then you've got your halftime breaks. You've obviously you've got your stoppages for injuries. I think it's a good time to maybe take a break if you can. But, yeah, I think substitutions are probably cutting a little bit fine. And as you saw, ran into some problems. It's good to see the broadcast there with the desk. You know, Bruce and Archie on the sideline as well. A bit more production in that sense as well. I think there's still a lot of areas to improve in that sense as well. But yeah, I think as you say, we don't want to excuse this. I don't want to say that, well, because they saved us, it's okay. They can make mistakes. But
no, I'm not saying that for a second.
Yeah, we I think we should work together to find a nice middle ground that you can still have your advertising because it brings in the money.
Yeah,
but we don't miss any of the action.
Yeah, I guess the basis of my point is people are sitting there going, you know, this is not the way forward for football, and you know, making sweeping criticisms about the broadcaster, which I understand why they're doing so. But if you take a step back, there's a good chance we don't have a league if they don't come in, or a league that actually cannot afford to pay professional footballers in Australia. And so then they all flee off to other countries to earn money that they can support their families with. Like, that is the realities of it, right? If they hadn't come in. But if, you know, we need to get things right, because then we've got issues in 3-4 years time when this deal ends, and the same issues. So, and everyone's aware of that, I'm sure, but just maybe a little bit of perspective is needed while discussing all these things about where the competition is and how lucky we are to have that money. But we need to make sure these mistakes don't happen, of course. And I'm sure everyone in the league is aware of that and trying to rectify it. So the semi-finals, you've said Adelaide will give City a bit of a scare potentially. Western United, Melbourne Victory. Break that one down for us, Rob, before we speak to Sam Krizovic from MacArthur. Can Western United challenge them and cause an upset in any way? What are the key pillars for them in order to try and do so?
We know the defensive record has been fantastic not in recent times, but this season. I do think recently they've probably opened up a little bit more than they would have liked against the Mariners. A few weeks ago, they gave away a lot of opportunities. Obviously, Wellington were all over them as well. And we know this attack of Melbourne Victory is frightening. So I think the key for Western United is they need to be switched on at every single moment and every single stoppage, every second of the game against the Victory, because I feel like if they're not at the races in the first leg, Victory could take it away from you within the space of 15 or 20 minutes. They're capable of scoring two or three really quick goals. And I don't know if Western United's got that many goals in them. They have scored this season, no doubt. They've had some good wins, but they're always seem like a one or two goal side. So you really feel like their defense needs to hold up. I think Victory, with the two home games that we mentioned with the asterisks next to it, I think they are the favourites. But anything can happen in a semi-final. Across the two legs, I always feel like the better team gets the advantage. And I think Victory and City, and for the sake of the league, I hope it's a Melbourne. Obviously, I love Adelaide. I've got a soft spot for Adelaide. Yeah. I'm not an Adelaide United cheerleader, maybe people think I am. but I think I would like to see a Melbourne derby. That would be something special. In that said, Adelaide Melbourne in a final, Adelaide Melbourne Victory, that's got a lot of history there as well. I think if Melbourne Victory win, I'd be happy to see them play either side.
Yeah, I feel like Western United need to produce, you know, their ultimate defensive performance from the first 2 months of the season when they were borderline unbreachable at the back. They need to produce that again. And I think they've waned a touch in that sense, but you know, they can't rely on Jamie Young making spectacular saves. They need to stop it before it gets to that point, which is what they were doing in that first 2 months with Leo Laquardi's absolute best. So if they can generate that sort of style of game yet again, then maybe they're a chance. Otherwise, you just think the Victory are going to have far too much quality and attack over the two legs for them and too much confidence right now. And they'll be well rested having had the weekend off when you're playing two games in a week in the semifinals. In regards to that, can that Asian Champions League campaign, is that the one little question mark perhaps on City and their ability to get through these two semi-finals at their best? Would that have knocked them around physically a little bit, maybe gassed them a touch? Could that be something for Adelaide to try and exploit?
Yeah, I think so. I think as we mentioned on the pod last week, they did look tired. Obviously, their league form hasn't been as good as either side of the Champions League as well. They only just scraped past Wellington, lost against Perth when they got back. We speak about this week off. They've had a weekend off, but they played last Tuesday or Monday. So, you know, they've had an eight or nine day break, not maybe as long as it has been in the past where you get the full 2 weeks off, but, you know, that could help them as well. Adelaide played on Sunday. They'll play again on Wednesday and again on Sunday. So you never know. You just don't know what's going to happen. I do think victory are the clear favourites against West United, but I feel like Adelaide and City is a little bit more even. But I think over the two legs, yeah, I think City will just have too much.
I can't see anything but a victory City grand final at the stage, which would be something really special, a Melbourne Derby grand final. It would be a fantastic way to end the campaign. But let's hope for some awesome narratives out of the next week or so. Get down to the game if you can, if you're in Melbourne, if you're in Adelaide. What kind of atmosphere would there be in Adelaide, Robbie, for the home semi-final? Talk us through what the mood is like in that town, because it's a big moment for them.
Oh, it is. It's massive. I mean, Adelaide's made the finals four of the last five seasons twice, I think, one game away from the final, once they lost on penalties against Perth and then against Sydney as well. So they've been there or thereabouts for a couple of years now. And I think, you know, they'd be disappointed not to have made a grand final yet. And here's another opportunity. So there's something special about Hindmarsh Stadium midweek.
Yeah, yeah.
The winter's really set in here. You could see the rain coming on in the broadcast on yesterday. So it'll be a nice atmosphere. Earlier kickoff than usual. It's a 6:35 kickoff, so it might make it a little bit difficult for people to get there. But even if they come in 5 or 10 minutes late, I expect a near capacity crowd, 12,000. I think they can have with the stand being redeveloped. So a lot of excitement. Cassini Yenge speaking to the media today. Carl will be up tomorrow, and then a big build up to that game on Wednesday. So a big week here in Adelaide. Adelaide United are very popular in this town, and even people that don't get along to the games, there's always a bit of an interest in how they're traveling. So especially when they're taking on a team from Victoria.
Fantastic insight. Right, let's get to the CEO of the MacArthur Bulls, because they made a very big announcement over the weekend. Their new coach is Dwight York. Yeah, we're delighted to have the CEO of the MacArthur Bulls, Sam Krzyzlewicz, with us on the A-League's official podcast. Big announcement for the club over the weekend. Dwight York, the Manchester United, Aston Villa, Premier League, Trinidad and Tobago legend, signing on to be their coach for the next 2 years. Sammy, congratulations on the deal. Just talk us through how it's come to be and how happy you are with it.
Oh, look, firstly, thank you. Thank you guys for having me on. In relation to how obviously, you know, what wasn't known to everybody that I knew for quite some time that our team was not continuing.
Yeah.
So while it became public towards the end of the season, you know, obviously we had plans in place and I had plans in place how to go about getting a replacement for Ante. You know, I mean, I interviewed a number of Australian coaches, you know, some are unemployed at the moment, others are assistants at existing A-League clubs. I also interviewed a number of foreigners, you know, from different countries. I don't think it's fair I mention what countries, but and one of them obviously was Dwight that came to mind. Now I spent quite a lot of time in the interview process. You know, coaches had to give me presentations, talk about things, how they change it, what they need to change, what they think the issues are from a football perspective. And at the end, you know, the decision was made for where we are today and where the evolution of the club is and where we want to go from a football perspective, that, you know, Dwight is most probably at this stage the best fit for that. It's as simple as that. You know, it was basically purely a footballing decision rather than based on anything else.
What were those key attributes you were looking for then when you went into this head coach search? Was it, you know, let's see what we get and see what their ideas are and let them influence us as a club? Or did you go in there with some pretty stern, pretty solid foundations of what you wanted in your new manager?
Well, I think that, I think, Robbie, we need to go back a step. I mean, obviously, Ante and I had a plan, 3-year plan, that was to for an evolution of the club, and it had to be someone that sticks to that plan. There's no use starting a new club, having some sort of plan. You know, and we did get knocked off course this year with COVID and a lot of things of what we wanted to do. And, you know, obviously, you know, we had plans in terms of recruiting certain players, certain way we want to play the game. And obviously the coach had to fit into that. I mean, you know, there's no use starting a club from scratch with a three-year plan then after 2 years just ditching because a new coach comes in. I think that's one lesson that I've learned from afar and of the A-League and obviously being involved in the NSL and the NPL for a long time is the coach has to work with the club within the plan and where you want to go. And, you know, we've seen many A-League clubs change with coaches, styles and things that's just been disastrous for it. And some, quite frankly, Robbie, as you know, haven't really recovered from that, have they? So for us, it's more like, okay, this is what we want to do. This is where we want to be. These are the points that we want to hit. Okay, who can hit those? In terms of, Dwight's got his ideas on sort of branding. You know, he's still got his way he wants to play certain things, but it don't differ too much or if at all with the philosophy and the way we want to go.
Dwight's done a bit of coaching, but he doesn't have an extensive record as a head coach. How concerned are you by that, Sam?
I'm not at all. Not at all. I mean, you know, I'll say again, I mean, you know, in 2008, I gave Ante Milicic his first role as a coach at Sydney United, and look where he gone. In 2013, Mark Rudin was, you know, came to Sydney United, look at he's gone. I've been involved in a lot of development of a lot of coaches. You even look at, you know, coaches, couple of that at the Wanderers Youth Academy, and it'll be standing up to their assistant next year with Mark. So, you know, for me, it's all about, you know, the person, man management, processes, you know, discipline and all that stuff in relation to football. So I'm not worried about any of that because at the end of the day, Daniel, the reality was whoever we took, the more than likelihood was going to be a rookie coach.
Mm.
You know, we're not going to take somebody who's been there, done that, who's actively wanted to get someone outside who hasn't done it before.
And then there are people who will say, well, you've done this to try and generate headlines, to try and get spectators through the gates, to try and lift the profile of the club a little bit more. What do you say to people who have suggested that is the reason why Dwight's got the job?
Oh, that's not the pure reason, let's face it. When we signed Ante Milicic, he was a high-profile appointment. He went to two World Cups, assistant socceroo, Matildas. I mean, you know, these people speak more for themselves. You know, just because Dwight was a good player, people shouldn't prejudge him whether he's going to be what sort of result he's going to have as a coach. But, you know, let's face reality. I think my experience is it does help if you're a high-level player and you played at a decent level to be a coach. If we look at the A-League, 80% of coaches in the A-League today were very, very good players in the A-League, NSL and overseas. Let's be brutally honest. So is the likelihood that someone who is a good player, although it's not a guaranteed success, is going to be a decent coach? I think it sure helps.
With all that said, the things on the field probably didn't go as well as you would have liked this year. Last off-season was fantastic in terms of player recruitment, the guys that you were able to bring in. What are the key areas that you've identified to get yourself back in the finals, along with Dwight, that's going to turn things around? I don't want to say turn things around. Obviously, first season was very good, missed the finals this season. How do you make sure you get yourself back up there again?
Oh, look, yeah, I think, look, you know, look, fate paid a part this season. Let's face it, we were flying at the beginning of the season after five games. And then COVID hit and we had 42 days off, you know. In that period also, you know, we got a bad injury to Davila for missed five games. I mean, Juric wasn't right for 24. You know, you made a big signing striker who's to replace Derbyshire. And, you know, he wasn't available, you know, until round 24. And then on top of that, the other, you know, quality player, Daniel De Silva, misses nine games, almost tore the hamstring off his tendon. So these all added to everything, the schedule, you know, everything, without making excuses. Look, we need to change a few personnel. Happens all the time. We need to strengthen in certain areas, which we're aware of. But the core of the squad's still good. You know, we've still got Davila, De Silva, Noon, you know, Shushkar, Uskok, Curto, plus a lot of decent young boys coming through. So we're not too worried about it.
There's plenty for Dwight York to work with. Did Mark Bosnich help with getting Dwight over the line at all, Sam?
No. I think Dwight was more doing reference checks on me than about me than I was about Mark. But no. I mean, the only time I really spoke to Boz about it, he hosted our awards night, and he said, "Oh, Dwight's been asking me questions about you," and I told him what you're like. So I said, "Oh, that's good," and that was it.
Okay. What about the health of the club in general? People are interested in MacArthur. It's been, it's a very tough time for a club to enter any league over the last couple of years. So how is everything at MacArthur holding up? It's been a tricky time for the league as a whole, as we know. How's the health of the club at the moment as you step into your third season?
Look, let's be brutally honest. I mean, there is a degree of society, especially the football trolls and Twitter experts that want the club to fail, which, for me is very amazing when we want the game to evolve, I've always said it, MacArthur is the future football in Australia, not today, but you're looking at it 10, 15 years when the new airport's built and the amount of people moving there, there's no other professional sporting franchise of any sort. So we're the only one. So we have to make it work. In terms of the health, the club's health, financially it's healthy. Off the field, we've been hampered by COVID, community engagement and all that. I can write a whole list of things that impacted it, but I'm not one to make excuses. I think we just have to work with what we've got, and we're going to get better, and we're going to deliver next year more.
The league as a whole, obviously the first year with Channel 10 and with Paramount, how have you seen the first year under new broadcast partners? Obviously, there's been a few teething issues as well.
Of course, Robbie. Look, I like anything. I mean, it was done late. The technology always is always improving. Having spent some time in North America myself on my other business ventures, I can assure you that Paramount's the real deal. They're the biggest media organisation. They have a lot of sport in North America, which they stream as well. So I think I think it'll take time, like anything. But really, that was the best outcome for the league as a whole. Putting everything together and everything that was going on and all the financial pressures and all the, negotiations and the desire for the league, that was the best result for the league.
Dwight was the original marquee player. He's now coming in as maybe a marquee coach. People can make of that what they like, but marquee players are certainly on the agenda. The APL have said that, Sam. And how confident are you that we'll get a few of them into the league ahead of next season? A, that's the first part of the question. And B, is MacArthur in the market for a marquee player or two? And can Dwight York help that?
Okay. Firstly, I do think we need marquees. I think it's especially the big clubs. I've gone on record and said this without disrespect to my friends up the road. The bling has lost the bling. And we need the bling to have the bling.
Dwight York brought the bling initially, didn't he?
And on top of that, we need the Wanderers to be strong, and we need Perth to be strong, and we need Brisbane to be very strong. Now, if we get that right, and I think marquees will help, if it's done in the right way, in the right demographic, I think the league will get lifted again. I mean, one thing you want, well, look, what it shows is, I see with the Dwight announcement, just by announcing him, the more engagement with people in Australia around football and even the ones overseas. It's about, get people talking again, get people interested, because a lot of people lost interest, not in the game itself. I think society has been impacted severely by COVID. People have lost interest in what they used to do. Viewing habits have changed. People's eating, everything's changed because of COVID. So we've got to really re-engage all that. And, the marquees will play a big part. In relation to us, I've spoken to Danny Townsend about it. He's well aware of what sort of, we'd be interested in some sort of marquee at what level. But, again, for me, the marquee must be representative of the demographic of where that club's located. The MLS is an example of how that's done correctly.
Last one from me, just a quick one. Is the rest of the coaching staff staying on, or will Dwight be bringing in his own coaching staff as well?
No, the rest of the coaching staff is there. Dwight obviously will bring in an assistant of his own, which is not abnormal. These days in the A-League, people don't realise, but maybe they do, maybe they don't, but there's two or three assistants as a, you know, a head of high performance. It's quite a pretty professional environment.
Brilliant, Sammy. Well, all the best, mate, for next season. I mean, I know you say you think there's some people who want the club to fold up. If anyone does feel that way, they're not a true football fan. And I don't think there's too many that are, but you're right. Social media can be a cynical place and maybe it comes across that way sometimes. But everyone would love to see Dwight succeed in Australia and McArthur to succeed as a result, because that would be great for football in this country. So well done on the appointment. Best of luck with it. And we look forward to watching your progress in the new season with Dwight York at the helm. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, great to have Sam on the program and to get his insights, Robbie, on the Dwight York deal. And there'll be skeptics. I think Sam accepts that in regards to the coaching appointments. But hopefully it works out okay for Dwight and for the club. How do you think it will go? What was your initial reaction when you saw the news?
Well, obviously, not really knowing much about Dwight York's coaching record because he doesn't have one. I suppose I'll watch like everyone else with excitement and anticipation. It does feel maybe a little bit like Robbie Fowler going to Brisbane Roar, that unknown. Sam didn't shy away from the fact he's got some sort of name is definitely something that they liked. But, you know, he's pretty adamant that it was going to be a first-time rookie coach. So, you know, he mentioned a few other names that have done quite well that he's appointed in the past. And, yeah, I mean, like you said, I hope he's a success. I hope, you know, if he does really well, it's going to create big news around the world. Dwight York doing well in his first season in charge. But yeah, I definitely think it's a watch this space, and yeah, it'd be interesting to see how it goes. It could, like you say, it could go either way.
Yeah, I mean, for me, is he a marquee coach or not? McArthur will say no. A lot of people will say it's just there to try and generate headlines and hope for the best on the field. I mean, yeah, for me, marquee coaches are like marquee strikers. You know, there's a great buzz that comes initially, but no one goes to see a marquee striker struggle to play after 2 or 3 weeks. You don't go to see a marquee coach walk up and down the sidelines. The performances need to follow. You have to have substance behind it. So ultimately, if the results aren't good, it's not going to end well. But McArthur knows that. Hopefully it does end up in a positive way for the club. So, and it was great to get Sam's ideas around marquees in general and the league as a whole. And you saw him speak about Paramount. Wow, bullish about what's going to happen long term. So, yeah, that was interesting for people to listen to. Speaking of marquee strikers, Luis Suarez is available. A final point to end on. I know it's extremely unlikely that the A-League's a chance to get him. He's probably got a multitude of offers from around the world. But get on the phone to Bruno Fornaroli and say, mate, here's 100, 200K commission if you can get this over the line. Your old mate, you've got a direct line to him. You love Australia. You've committed to Australia. You know how good it is. No pressure, but if you can make it happen, 150, 200K commission in your back pocket. I reckon that's worth it. Imagine Luis Suarez in the A-League.
I'd like to see him in a Sydney FC. I'd like to see him in a Sydney FC shirt as well, because you know what he's like when he gets a bit fired up. He can get under anyone's skin, and I feel like Sydney FC need a little bit of that at the moment, and they're the team that a lot of people love to hate along with victory. So I think he'd play the villain really well at Sydney FC, Luis Suarez.
I think we'd all bite each other's hand off to get Luis Suarez. <in the A-League. laughs> little thing to end on. Robbie, thanks, mate. Always a pleasure to chat football with you. It's been a good start to the final series. Looking forward to the two-legged semi-final series. It's back in the A-League, and so it gives us an extra game during the week. And it should be a bumper week of football. And then this time next week, we can talk about the grand final and who will be suiting up in the very big dance. Robbie, thanks, mate. Have a good week.
Pleasure. Thanks, buddy. These moves looking real nice in the future. These moves looking real nice in the future. These moves looking real nice in the future. Hold up on a minute, look nice, look nice. These moves looking real nice in the future. These moves looking real nice in the future. These moves looking real nice in the future. Hold up on a minute, look nice. Yeah, we look nice, future looking nice, we don't need to tell them twice. Here comes the future. Yeah, we look nice, future looking real nice, we don't need to tell them twice. Here comes the future.